This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro, and we're here once again to answer your questions.
Hi there, my name is Reed Peterson, and I live in Bismarck, North Dakota.
My name is John Kitchens.
This is Rami from Maryland.
My question is about co-parenting schedules during the pandemic.
Working from home has left me unmotivated and sometimes simply unable to work.
I applied for one of the SBA loans and was told that they lost my application.
Even when I managed to fall asleep, it's been impossible to stay asleep.
Can we socialize as long as we are 6 feet apart?
At what point do you say, I just have to do it and there's some risk, but it's one that I'm willing to take?
I would love any advice. Thank you.
NPR journalists and outside experts are on hand tonight to offer solid facts, tell you what we know, and correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. Send us your questions about your health, economic worries, or adjusting to life in a pandemic. Go to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. Now, each night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? Well, today President Trump outlined a new plan to speed up delivery of a coronavirus vaccine. He hopes it will be ready by the end of the year. The administration is trying to get a head start on manufacturing, while 14 potential vaccines are under development.
When we get the good word that we have the vaccine, we have the formula, we have what we need, we're ready to go, as opposed to taking years to gear up. We're gearing up.
Maryland, Oregon, and Louisiana are among the states reopening today. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards urged people to keep social distancing.
If we lose patients, if we're inconsiderate to fellow Louisianans, then we can go in the wrong direction. That is the worst thing, not just with respect to public health, that's the worst thing you can do for the economy.
Wisconsin has opened up this week, but only after the state Supreme Court struck down the governor's stay-at-home order. Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway told NPR the city is still enforcing its order.
I think it's really outrageous and irresponsible. The safer-at-home order was working here in Wisconsin. We cannot afford to ease up and let this virus spread throughout our state.
Also today, JCPenney filed for bankruptcy protection. The department store was founded in 1902. It's just the latest retail casualty of this virus. Today we learned that retail sales plummeted 16.4% in April. That is a record drop as millions of Americans stayed home. You've sent us lots of questions about the economy, and so we've called up Greg Ipp once again to help answer those questions. He is chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So, as we said, that's a record number for retail sales, 16.4% drop in 1 month. What does that actually show? What's the story behind that number?
Well, first of all, that 16% drop in April came after an 8% drop in March. So altogether, retail sales have fallen by a quarter, which is simply unprecedented. We've never seen a drop that large, certainly as far back as we've had records. And it was across the board, but if you actually look at the detail, you see what's really been hit hardest or anything that's even slightly discretionary. For example, furniture and appliances down 60%, clothing sales down 80%. The one area that's growing, non-store sales, as they call it, which basically refers to internet retailers like Amazon, they're up 8% because they're one of the few retailers that isn't directly affected by shutdowns. And I think that tells us a couple of things. First of all, it tells us that a lot of people simply cannot go out and shop because they're being kept at home or because the stores are closed. It also tells you that a lot of people aren't in the mood to shop because they're so uncertain about the state of the economy.
Yeah, and these retailers typically pay state and local tax revenues, which are not coming through. So the House is voting on another stimulus bill that would give money to states. Just tell us, what kind of financial condition are the states in right now?
Oh, this pandemic and the economic contraction have been just brutal for states and local governments. As you mentioned, they depend a lot on sales taxes. And as we were just discussing, a lot of stores aren't open, so nobody's sending any sales tax to their state governments or to their local governments. But it goes beyond that. I mean, states also collect income taxes, and people are being laid off left, right, and center. They're not paying income taxes. And at the same time, they're going to have a lot of expenses in the year ahead. They'll probably be paying higher Medicaid benefits for people who've lost their jobs and need Medicaid. They'll have other expenses associated with, like, keeping schools cleaned and disinfected for when children eventually come back. They'll have expenses related to the coronavirus itself. Morgan Stanley estimates that the hit to revenue by the middle of next year for states and local governments combined could be about $250 billion. That's wow. a lot of money. And so because states aren't supposed to, sorry.
Go ahead.
States aren't supposed to, yeah, the problem is states aren't, unlike the government, which can run a big deficit, states aren't supposed to run deficits. So they have two choices, raise taxes or cut expenses, which means cutting jobs.
All right. Now, this bill that the House is going to vote on would also include another round of payments to citizens. And that's what Tyler in Houston called us about.
I'll soon receive a stimulus check from the federal government, but I don't have any unpaid bills or major expenses to spend it on. I've thought about investing the extra funds, but I don't want the money to go straight towards big corporations and mostly just benefit wealthy shareholders. What is a meaningful way that I can spend my stimulus check so that it boosts the economy and has a positive impact where it's needed most?
Okay, Greg, so if Tyler's goal is to keep the economy afloat, what's the best way for him to do that?
Well, it's funny you should ask it, because an economy is essentially a situation where workers, consumers, and companies, they all get together and they do business with each other in a way that makes them all better off. So ordinarily, I would tell them, just go out and spend that money on whatever makes you most satisfied and happiest. That's the point of an economy, right? Mm-hmm. But in these, you know, it's a little different right now. Of course, it's actually very hard to go out and spend money because you might be kept at home or your favorite store or restaurant might be closed. Yeah. So how would spending that money do the most good? Well, you could perhaps order takeout from one of your favorite restaurants and help keep it afloat. But personally, I think that if you really want to do the greatest good, if what you have in mind is the welfare of your fellow Americans, there are a lot of nonprofits out there that do really important work for some of the hardest hit and most vulnerable society. They're really suffering. Nonprofits rely on a lot on things like fundraisers that they can't have right now, on live mm-hmm. events, on sponsorships, all that revenue is going away. Museums, theaters, other organizations, they sell tickets. Nobody's buying tickets any longer. Think about if there's a cause that you think is really important to you, think about like making a donation or buying a one-year membership, something like that. I think that is one way to make your dollars have the greatest benefit for the people who need it the most.
That's a great suggestion. We also learned yesterday that another 3 million people filed for unemployment in the last week. And Claire in Baltimore wants to know about the demographics of those unemployed people.
According to the April jobs report, more women lost their jobs than men since the pandemic started. Why is that?
Greg, is that true that more women have lost their jobs than men?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Back in February, before this pandemic hit us, the unemployment rate for both men and women was under 4%. But now it's 16% for women, but 13% for men.
Why is
that? And that reflects the different... Well, it reflects the different occupations that men and women have. So women are really highly represented in occupations that involve personal contact. Think of food preparation or personal care, hairdressers and stylists. Think of healthcare support people, workers, nursing home assistants, and so forth. You know, it's funny, in the past, often the industries that were hardest hit were manufacturing and construction. They were the ones that would go decline first in a recession, and those were male-dominated jobs. This time, it's really quite the opposite. And it's creating a lot of hardship. A lot of women are either the second or the only breadwinner in their household. It's also a situation where the schools are closed, childcare is closed. So a lot of women, even if they have jobs available to them, they actually can't go out and work because they're at home looking after their children.
Right. Okay, our next question comes from Kirk in Kansas, who's wondering how the economy continues to function with unemployment numbers being as high as they are.
With the coronavirus causing 20%+ unemployment, I was wondering why the remaining 80% of employed people can't sustain the economy.
We should clarify in the numbers, although unemployment is staggeringly high, it is not yet above 20%. But how does the economy function when unemployment is as high as it is right now?
Well, first of all, if you actually measure all the people who lost their jobs correctly, it could be as high as 20%. Hmm. But the reason...
You mean some people don't show up in the numbers either because perhaps they're undocumented or perhaps they're not currently looking for a job or haven't filed for unemployment. Yeah, the numbers are higher than the unemployment rate reflects. Yeah.
That's exactly right. So let's say that 20% are unemployed and 80% are still working. Well, those 80% are able to sustain an economy. The problem is it's an 80% economy. They can only spend as much as 80% of the people used to spend. They can only sustain economic activity at 80% of its level. And honestly, if that lasts for a year, that would be a disaster. That would represent an extraordinary degree of economic hardship. I think the real question is, how do we get those 80% to basically become 85 and then 90 and then 95 and then 100%? So the first of all, we have to get the pandemic under control so that we can start to reopen businesses, people can go out and spend again and go back to work. That's the most important step.
Greg, before then, I let you go, you know, we've got about a minute left, and you've given us so many kind of like explanations of dark, sad, depressing things. I wonder if there are any signs of hope when you look at the economic numbers that show you things might not be this bleak for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, actually, I think that in the last few weeks, there are actually signs of optimism and recovery. We've talked about how April was so bad, but as some states have started to reopen up, you look at things like cell phone mobility data, people are starting to go out again. We've seen roughly a 20% bounce in people going to retail establishments. We've seen like fast food restaurants report improvements in sales, more people taking Uber drivers. Now, don't get me wrong, we're working from a very low base. We're nowhere near anything near a healthy economy, but we're starting to see the signs of growth. So at a minimum, we're not going down any further. It's a long way back, but at least we're not digging the hole deeper.
All right, Greg Ipp, thank you for answering these questions and leaving us with that sliver of sunlight on the horizon. He's chief economics commentator for the Wall Street Journal. We appreciate your time tonight.
Okay, thanks a lot for having me.
And you can hear much more of our coverage when you download the NPR One app. Go to the Explore tab and click on the coronavirus outbreak for a curated stream of stories. This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.